Right, after that fun and games, I think you probably all know who I am, Will Godfrey, otherwise known as the Yoshimi Man or various other insults or whatever. What I want to do is go through some of the features that Yoshimi's developed over the last few years, which may not be entirely obvious. And some might not appear terribly useful. Some you might think, oh, I wish we had that, or whatever. But anyway, first of all, one of the things we did quite a long time ago, and we've slowly progressed with, is start menu. We've originally, there used to be a dirty great long menu that had all sorts of totally unrelated items on it. You'll now see we've only got a very short menu, and they're all basically system-type control items. The next one along, which also used to have partial entries on there, is now purely instruments, and it, you show what the stored ones are, load and save and clear, all related directly to instruments. The next one, very similar format, is patch sets, which in previously used to be referred to as parameters. Well, we thought patch sets made much more sense because it referred to what they really were rather than such a generic term. And again, we've got show, load, save, and also now recent sets. So the last ones that you used, lo and behold, you can show them there and you can click on them and get to them straight away. Following the same theme, we've got paths, the bank root directories, which used to be part of the settings, is now got its own little section there. And again, you've got preset directories, which any presets that you might generate through copy and paste, the locations where you've got set up for those. A new one also on here is the scales. We show the settings, load and save, clear, and again, we've got recent state scales, but because none have been saved, that's grayed out. That will only be active as soon as something is saved or loaded. And the same is the Yoshimi state. Again, load, save, recent states. The state information on here is just about the entire setup, including all the system setup, so that you can get an exact duplicate of what the whole condition of Yoshimi is at that particular time. Going back to the Yoshimi, which we have an about window, which gives the basic copyright information and also always gives the version number as well. The reason that's showing an M is because it's actually the master version, it's not the last release. We always indicate now if we're running one that isn't an actual release one. We know what it's based on, but we know it's not actually that release, because that can cause confusion either. Settings, again, we split these out to try and separate them into their own fairly obvious groupings. Oscillator size, internal buffer size, these are all more or less standard. Some of the names again have changed slightly, but it's pretty much the original sort of settings. Few little extra ones. Reports. We can either now send them to standard error, or we can send them, as I've got here, to a console window. And if I open the reports window there, that's the messages we got at first startup, which can be useful. A new button that's only appeared very recently, this one, hide non-fatal errors. If you've got situations that can generate a whole nest of errors that go up right down to maybe, say, a defect in an XML file, you'll end up with about four or five different error messages as it rolls back through the stack to the actual error itself. Well, sometimes that's not actually particularly useful. So you can click on that, and you'll only see the last error message in the list. Log XML headers, that's another fairly new one. That's so you can actually see the source the files that you're loading came from. You can tell whether they're pure Yoshimi files or whether they're Xin and Yoshimi compatible files and which version that they were generated by. So if it was a file that was generated by the original Xin 2.2.1, that will show on there as well, although that actually shows as version 1, I think, if I remember rightly. Jack is now has its own setting. The MIDI source, you can define an actual port that it's going to try and find. So if you've got some Jack MIDI thing running, if that's running before you start Yoshimi, Yoshimi will find it and then connect to it. The server, fairly obvious, whatever Jack server is running. And then you've got these two set as preferred. Now these are exclusive with ALSA. If you unselect that one, the ALSA one will be selected. And again there, if you select that one, the ALSA one will be unselected. And that is not effective immediately. We're hoping to get it so it will be eventually. But at the moment, you've got to restart for that to become effective. But from now on, it's then remembered for every time you restart. And again, we get exactly the same thing with the ALSA tab there. Again, you've got the same thing, set as preferred. And again, you can define what MIDI input it's looking for when it starts up. You can also directly define the sound card, which can be very useful. If you've got multiple sound cards, you can then decide that you want to connect to a specific card. And then you've got the normal sample rates that it'll attempt to connect to. I find normally sample rates, it'll be quite happy to, with a decent sound card, quite happy to go with what selection you've given. Sometimes, I don't fully understand it, but sometimes ALSA will say, no, we're going to have 44.1K, whether you like it or not. And I'm sure somebody knows why that happens, but I'm afraid I don't at the moment. Right. A few other things on this top area. Instead of a big panic button, we've now got a more discreet stop button there. It behaves in exactly the same way. It's the only red button in the whole of the main screen, so you can't really miss it. Reset, which used to again be on this menu, now has its own button. And it asks you if you want to be sure that you want to reset all dynamic values. And the default is no. Previously, it used to be yes. Well, we play safe now. We generally have defaults as being no's rather than yes's. Mixer panel. Previously, you only had that form there. Two columns of eight. Now you can have whatever choice you've got. If you've got a nice deep screen, you might prefer it that way. If you've got a wide screen like this, then that works better and it looks better as well, I think, personally. If I'm going too fast, just do shout. There's quite a lot which I want to try and cover. If I look at the audio connections here at the moment, you've got left and right, your standard connected. Also, it exposes the track one left and right independent outputs as well. It always exposes those, although they're not actually connected anywhere. If you pick up, say, channel 2, that's still going to left and right, but it's not showing it at all on there. We've got a new entry down here, which is just got main, part, and both. And that determines what outputs it goes to. This is specific to Jack. If you've got ALSA as the output, these are all grayed out because they're not relevant. So if I now select part, you'll see straight away these two track two individual ones have now appeared. If I had both, it would still go to main as well. But at the moment, with it set to part, it's only going to those two outputs. However, as a bit of extra insurance, if you change your mind and think, well, no, sorry, I don't want that after one, I'm going back to Maine, it still leaves those exposed. Now, the reason for that is that you may start up with those exposed, connect something else to it, and if you then no longer use that, you don't want those to suddenly disappear, and whatever else that was connected thinks, hang on, where my two inputs just disappeared to? So once they're there, they'll stay there for the rest of the session. If you stop and restart, then of course you're back to square one. The other reason for doing that is that Yoshimi can now have 64 parts. If you expose 64 independent outputs all at once, that's a very long list. That's 128 individual outputs, which is not likely to ever be wanted. So that's that aspect. What else about there? Still talking about parts. You'll notice we've also got this now. I'm saying part two, but saying part two of 16. We work in up to four rows of 16 parts now. The overhead, as far as Jack is concerned, is insignificant when you're not actually doing anything. I mean, that's it sitting at the moment. They're sitting DSP load idle around about 0.5, 0.6. If I step that up to 64 parts, you know, that there's very little difference. So that there's no real overhead from that point of view. The only reason we actually have it switchable like that is for convenience, to avoid confusion and clutter. You don't want it there if you're not actually using it. You'll notice also when I switch to 64 parts, straight away a new window appears there, and you can select which row of parts you're looking at. By default, the columns follow the actual channel numbers. So this one is, as you can see, although it's not enabled, is looking at channel one. That one is channel one, and the same again, right the way through back to the default. If I take that back to 16, that then just disappears. Again, a bit of extra insurance. If you've actually used one of these higher sets and then disable it and then want to save the entire patch set, or even though they're disabled, those higher ones are still saved. So if you've got your most important, wonderful patch on one of those, you don't lose it by having it switched out. It's still there and it'll be saved as part of a patch set. Also, a patch set will also save the setting of whether you've got set, say, 16 or 64 parts. So when you reload it, it will also reset the number of parts available. And that is immediately available. That's not, you don't have to restart for that. Right, where's best to go on from there? I've already mentioned we now have the history capability. So if you use any of these here, you can restore what you last set. So for instance, here in patch sets, if I go recent sets there, the last one I used was Crystal Ship. And if I reload that straight away, all the patches come in, the volume, panning settings, everything, and all these are all set exactly as they were last time I used them. And again, prove that the reset works. Reset that and we're back to as we were before. Right. Yep. It's resetting all the voices. It's resetting the master volume, key shift, all these controls here, the controllers. They're all reset. In fact, everything except configuration settings are reset. It's a sort of point of amusement. The only thing that doesn't get reset is these going red if you go into overload on there. It's the only thing that doesn't get reset. And actually, I thought, well, sod it, I'm going to leave that. Let them see that they've that they've gone over the top. Right, I think the best thing now to go on is to look at the command line interface, which again is fairly new. So if we close that down now, oh, that's another thing. If you change any settings, it won't automatically save them. It asks you if you want to save them when you exit. Now, because I flicked through some of the settings there, it regarded them as having been changed. So I can either cancel and go back as I was, as if nothing had happened, or I can save or not save the settings. I'm going to decide not to save at the moment. So we're just closing. Now, if alternatively I start up from a terminal window, capital K just as the auto connect on the audio. Now, something you might notice is that's come up. That's because we left it up last time. Yoshimi now remembers the state of many of the windows. This one also, the mixer panel, that came up. The editing windows, like the AdSense engine windows, it remembers their position, but it won't reopen them because you may not have an AdSense part actually operating at that time. So it can't open a window that doesn't actually exist. But if you do then open it, it will reopen it to the last place it was seen at. The same with settings. That reopens to where it was last set. It was last set there, so that's where it will reopen to. Now, we've tried to implement in the command line command structure very similar to standard read line type format. So if I just type a question mark, then lo and behold, you'll get all the entries in there, which is exactly. But that's all the settings there. And that's quite a fair old list. If, on the other hand, if I close that and in settings send it to standard error, save and close, and then use the same command again, lo and behold, we're now paging. And we can do the normal type operations. Can't find the page up and page down ones on. I'm not sure. Oh, there we are. Oh no, it's still not. Oh, there we are. So you can go up and down in pages, as well as individual lines, and it will. Sorry, I'm used to another keyboard, and it keeps and everything's in the wrong place here. There we go. Anyway, I'll just quit from there, and we're back to the command line there. You're trying to.
Quick question. Is it going to work? Yeah, okay. The default for Yoshimi when you give no command and parameters is to enable the command line mode, right?
Yeah.
And the default for the setting is to output the help in the window, not on the console?
No, it's to output it to wherever you've decided it should be output.
Okay, but the default, if you never used it before?
If you've never used it before, it will go to Yoshimi's own console window.
Yoshimi's own console?
Yeah, that's the reports window.
That would be the wrong thing for a blind person, right?
I beg your pardon. No. You're right. Actually, it does. Yeah, because we changed that a while ago. Okay. Some for specific. Yeah, a very first time startup, it will go to the command line.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. You asking that reminded me that we had that same question from a blind person, and we changed it round for them. The other thing is you can also list various states. So I can list the routes, and that's listed however the bank routes that I've actually got set up, which gives their actual full path. I can list the banks. And that's all the banks that are in there. And you'll notice they have these ID numbers because within Yoshimi, you will always refer to them by the ID number, not by the name. The reason for that is that you can change the ID numbers of any of them without actually changing the file system at all. And you can then effectively regroup them from within here and from within the bank window that Yoshimi supports for the GUI as well. Again, we've got the read line type holding on there. And along with that one, the obvious one is also to list the instruments. And that lists the instruments that are in the current bank. And again, does the instruments you'll have there. Now, you notice that time I actually didn't put the full name and I just put INST. One thing we put a lot of effort into here, again, because this is aimed at people that are going to want to be doing a lot of as little typing as possible, as much as often, is we have a set of abbreviations where the most common commands have the minimum possible abbreviations. So, for instance, those same commands I did before, I could have done quite simply like that. And I've listed the banks. And again, the same with the routes. And there they are. And these directly align with there. Those are the instruments. Those are the banks. And those are the routes. So those are exactly the same things. If I do, that is now listed the current setup on there. And if you look there, you'll find current route ID is 9. The current route ID is 9 is highlighted on there. And it'll say the, where are we? Current bank ID is 105. So if I look for the banks, we'll find, lo and behold, 105 is the highlighted current bank. We don't identify a current instrument because that's not really a relevant setting. But all these other settings are here, master volume, master key shift, all the information, the basic information that you might want to know is there, including where the reports are sent. Now, because this is aimed at, again, blind people, if you've got reports sent to the reports window, you'll still get a message here to say that it is sent there. So you won't just get nothing showing on here. You'll actually be aware that you've actually got it set the wrong way, as it were. So if I now, well, actually, I'll do it from here. I'm trying to remember what I... I can't remember what the command is now. Typical. Oh, it is a G. Yeah. Also, in this help menu, all your minor abbreviations are indicated by the capitals. So, for instance, if you ever use the scale, it's SC that you have to put in. Set minimum abbreviation is S. Reports, it's REP. The reason for that having to be REP is you're going to get roots being used as a single R. And so on. And in this case, too, if I now exit that. And if I do right, reports are now sent to the console window, and you'll see there sending reports to console window there. But any command you send here, it'll tell you that it's not sending it here anymore. It's sending it to the console window. A quick get out of that is just, and that sets you back your default conditions, which is sending reports of standard errors and showing all errors. Remember I mentioned before about hiding the non-fatal system errors. They are now being shown again. Probably the most used command of all is going to be the set command. So in that case, again, it's a minimum abbreviation. And the way you set things, you can actually daisy chain commands. So I can do SP4 F type. Right. Now, what I've done there in one move is I've set part 4 in the terminal window, but it actually sets part 5 in the GUI. This is because all the numbering here all starts from 0. We don't have this mixture of zeros and one starting numbers that the GUI has. Again, this was at the suggestion of someone that uses terminals exclusively. He hates this business where some things start from 1 and others start from 0. So we thought, well, these are the people we're aimed at. We'll orientate it in their favour. But at the same time, it set the default, the first FX number, as being reverb and the first effect preset. Now, if I enable that so we can actually see it, I edit that and look at the effects, you'll find, lo and behold, it has set the reverb 1. Again, this comes up as 1 on the GUI, but it is 0 on the command line. Currently, the part effects don't directly update when you change the command line. They don't change it in their GUI. That's something that we're working on. The system and insertion effects do change immediately, but it's just specifically the part ones that don't. They are correct. If you just switch from one part to another, you will then see the correct one. So if I set set preset 3. It set it to there, but it hasn't shown it there. If I just switch backwards and forwards and come up to again, then you'll see that it has actually set it. It's something which we need to get operational, but it has actually set the effect. You might also notice that I didn't do the whole business about the part effects and all this, but I just went straight to the preset number. The command line remembers various different levels that you've actually reached at. It's now on the effects level, so you only actually operate all the commands you do now are referring to effects. The effect number, the effect type and the preset. If you want to get back to, say, the part menu, you then just do that. And that steps back one. We're now on part level, and everything we do now refers to parts. So if I want to change the part volume, I just do set V, say, 40, and you'll find, lo and behold, it should have set that. Oop, was. Forgot to do the space. And there, it set the volume. Spaces are critical on here. You must have them. There are almost no commands that can be stacked directly because they all need parameters. but they'll also take default parameters, so you can, just leaving a space, will give you your default parameter or the last used one. So for instance here, the last used part number was 4, so I set the volume of 4. But what I can do if I want to, I say, well, I don't want to work on 4, I now want to work on 3, and I want to change the panning. So I go S3P20, and lo and behold, it set the panning of part number 3 without even enabling it and without having to go, step back and forward again. Because we're at part level, it directly changed to part 3 when I gave it a number. That's all I have to do. If I go S1 like that, it'll straight away, it'll change to, well, part 2 of the GUI, but part 1 as far as this is concerned. It also, as you'll see here, the responses, it always tells you what level it's at and what number it's on or what effect it's on and all the rest of it. And as we develop it, this will, everything that we do will always reflect back on where you actually are in the system. So you'll always know. I'm not sure. Is there any questions about that whole area? It does get very confusing at first, but once you get familiar with it, it is actually very, very quick and easy to use. Anyone? No? Right. Moving swiftly on then. My particular hobby horse was some time ago, about 3 years ago, I think now, just a matter of curiosity. I thought, I wonder what happened if you set more than 16 parts. So I set it up to run at 32 parts, and lo and behold, with very little changes, I could actually do it, and I could actually see 32 parts. I couldn't do a lot with them because the ones from 16 onwards were just virtually exact duplicates of the lower ones, because I had no way of making any sort of particular direct controls of it. But it did open the way for me for something which I'd wanted to do for a long time, which was vector control. And vector control, I don't know if any of you remember the old Yamaha series that had the joystick button on them, which you could then change between 4 parts. You had an X and a Y axis, and you could then mix across. And this was just a simple basic volume mix. You faded one up and another one down. And I thought, well, hang on, if we can have multiple parts, not just the 16 ones, and we can have them in groups of 4 all on the same channel, then lo and behold, this is the way in for vector control. And so I initially started doing it, I think it was November before last, and the last LAC I was actually showing in its most basic form, it was usable using NRPNs to do the actual setting up. Well, now we've come further than that. Now we can do it, set it up much more easily from the command line. And also, whereas previously the only controls we had were volume and pan, we can now do up to 4 different features, as we call them, and they can be together or they can be separate. So on the x-axis, you could have volume and panning being controlled, and the y-axis, you could have filter cutoff and modulation being controlled. Or you could swap them around, or you could have them going in the reverse direction. So you could have the volume going up with the control setting, but the pan shifting from right to left instead of from left to right. And the final step in that is now you can actually redefine 3 out of those 4 features to any CC that Yoshimi will recognize. At the moment, that's not terribly useful because there aren't very many of them that are available. But looking towards the future is that when we eventually can get MIDI Learn operational, then that means any control that you can set could then be put on vector control as well. So it could be an individual filter for maybe one voice in AdSynth, or it could be whatever.
Thank you. So there's a question from IRC from Fundamental, which is, which users is this command line interface targeted at?
Command line itself is mostly targeted at blind users or people with sight difficulties or people that want to control Yoshimi other than via a GUI. And that can be by using NRPNs or it can be using any form of TTY that can link into the command line. So it's quite wide-ranging. Still on vector control, if I set one up now, I actually run through TTY MIDI to do it because I've got my own little dodgy bit of electronics there that to control it. So we'll connect that up because we always forget to do that, don't we? Right, we'll connect that. And I'll see again, the command line has just reported that it's now seen a MIDI thing. The first thing to do, which 9 times out of 10, you're going to forget the first time you use this, is if you haven't got the number of parts available set, then you won't be able to use vector control. And it will very quite politely tell you that you haven't got enough parts. So the first thing I'm going to do is set the available parts to 64. It would work, only one thing. Anyone spot my deliberate mistake? I'm still at part level. So it's expecting to see a part command. To go back to the top level, it's simply that. And that could have been on the front of a command. You can put that on the front of any command and it'll go right back to the top level to operate. So we'll now try that again. And again, we've got the full reline history coming up here. So I just step back a couple of steps and straight away I've now got, and you'll see this is reflected, it now has 64 parts available. The other thing is it always pays to know which actual root and bank you're in. So what I'll do now is set the root to 9. And it's just done so and it's told me what it is I've actually just set. And I'll set the B bank to, I can't remember, 110. And now that's the bank of instruments we got, so we know where we are exactly. Again, because it uses defaults where it can, if I just do, hang on, set vector CC, this is the incoming controller value that's going to be the x-axis controller. So CC14, which is an unused CC by default, so it's available for us to play about with. And again, it tells me exactly what it's done. Because I didn't specify any particular channel, it's assumed the default one, which is channel 0 or channel 1 on the GUI. And now, if I set the features for that one, what I'm going to do is I'm going to set volume for that. It's reported that's exactly what it's done. And what I can now do is set the programs for that. And because it's the x-axis, we're going to set the programs for the left side and the right side. That's not probably terribly clear. The left side is going to be the voice which will be most effective if the joystick is towards that direction. Right is obviously the other one. And as it happens, the left one is going to be part number one, the right one will be, part number 0, the right one will be part number 16. So if I now set PR, which for program, L20, and that's set that part, it tells me which part is actually set. If I do the same for the right, and for that, I'm going to set 120. And lo and behold, it's set that part there. I now switch to the y-axis, and I go and we're going to use CC15 for that channel, because again, it's one that we know that we can use, it's unused. And for features on that one, I'm going to set for panning. So we'll set F2, which is the default feature number 2, the default is panning. And we enable it, otherwise it won't do anything at all. If you don't set features, it's not going to do very much. It's just going to sit there sulking when you try and operate it. And then again, we set the actual voices we want to use in that. So for there, and this time it's up and down. We're on the y-axis, so it's up and down, not left and right. 78. And that's that voice now tied onto there. And if I now do the down direction, and we'll set that to 107. Right. And that now, if I now do list vectors, it tells me on channel 0, I've got XCC set to 14, and features are pointed to 1, and Y, features are pointed to 2. And if I now twiddle that, and straight away you can see that it's having some effect. We've got that on part 2, so it's not actually going to show anything. If I move that up to 48, 33 to 48, you'll see that while I'm varying the volume on that one, on the x-axis, on the y-axis, I'm varying the pan on that one. And if we've got everything connected, which we don't appear to have, and this is the sort of effect you can get. You see, you're getting the left and I don't know if you can actually detect the left and right shifts on there, as well as the so you've got real control over those features. But that is what vector control gives you. Now, very recently, we added something else to this. We can now save that. So we can save that, and all I do, if you don't put a full path, it'll save to whatever the current directory is. So I can just put, might help if I was back in the command line. Oh. So I can now just put save vector, and we'll call it new sound. And it will also automatically put an extension on that. It'll call it XVY as an extension. And if you load it, it'll look for that. If it doesn't find it, it will still load it, but it won't be very happy. So there's your first save one. It's not only saved in there, it's also saved in settings, and it'll be saved along with any other data in your patch sets and such like as well. So that, I think, is just about it as far as vector control is concerned. Oh, another thing. I saved it there. It saved whatever was on the current part that I was working on. The current part was part 0 because I was working on part 0. It saves the part that it was loaded, that it was saved from, as well as the actual data. So if you just do a reload, it will reload to the same part. But you can actually tell it, sorry, the same channel, you can actually tell it to reload to a different channel. So if I do new sound? If I now say CH5 New sound. And there, what low, there it is, yeah. And that's exactly the same setting as we had before. And it'll also very kind, be very kind to you, if you haven't got the right number of parts set, it'll actually set those as well. If you'd only wanted to use one axis, just the x-axis, you could have used it with just 32 parts, and it would have set that up as well. Now that's actually, once I did that, I thought, well, hang on, what is there anything else that we can use these 64 parts for? And I did come up with something else, which is a little bit peculiar, but I've actually produced a representation of it using the normal channel so you can see exactly what it does. Because there's lots of extra controls that we've added, you can now effectively disable a channel by setting its channel, disable a part by setting its channel number to the normal number plus 16. Let's stop that and do a complete reset. Again, you can do the reset from the command line as well if you want to. From the GUI, all you can do is you can change to those channels. From the terminal, I can set that. Go back to S. Oh, hang on, still going to be on part 4. SP0. Right. Now that has effectively disabled that without actually changing anything about it. It'll no longer receive MIDI commands. But whatever sound might be set there is still available. So you think, well, what's the use of that? How can that be of use? And the way it can be used, I did sort of briefly refer to last year at the LAC. If I take that back to the normal channel one and, I disconnected. Yeah. Let's reconnect that again. Okay. Now I've got to try and manage this. Right. It still responded to the key off, but it won't respond to any further keys. However, if instead of that, if we go back to zero, and if this time I set it to 32, right, look, no hands. I've now got a drone going there, which will remain there until such time as I re-enable it and then give it a note off, or we do a stop or anything like that. So you can use that to set up a drone, and then you can actually then say, well, okay, I still want to be able to use that channel. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go to 32 parts. I use part 17. I'm going to enable it, and I'm going to have that on there. And I've still got that drone going. And I've still got part 0 available for something else, which might be related. It might be something completely different. But we'll stop that now, because after a while it gets a bit boring. So that's another thing you can start to do with it. And it gets better. What I'm going to do now is I'll stop that from there and go back to a normal GUI start. And
Will?
Yeah?
Another question. Okay, so first thing, you now set up the vector controls on the command line, but setting it up on the GUI would also work, right?
You can set the programs from the GUI, but you can't set the vector itself up. You can set it via NRPNs. I've yet to work out an ideal way of getting an extra window to do a complete vector control from within the GUI itself. I want to do it, but it's not a high priority.
Okay.
Ironically, the people that have shown most interest in vector control are both blind, which is just pure chance. I never expected that, but two of them, and they think it's great, which is wonderful. I mean, even if they're the only two people in the world that are using it, that's it's nice to know. But I say, eventually, I will produce a GUI access to it, and possibly actually show the position of the controls as well, which at the moment you're guessing basically. If it's not volume and pan, you can't see what they are. Anyway,
sorry, two follow-up questions still.
All right, two for the price of one, yeah.
I'm getting gluttony. First is, you set up for X and Y, so you had four patches between you could vector around.
Yeah.
In your demo, I only heard two sounds. So did you only use one of the two controllers?
No, there were four sounds going there.
Okay, then I didn't hear it.
There were four sounds. Two of them were being swept left and right, and the other two were being volume controlled up and down.
Okay.
The two that were swinging left to right had a modulation on it, and the two that were being swept up and down, one was a very rich pad, and the other one was a much sharper morphing sound.
Okay.
But, they were all four there.
Okay, so those were two dimensions. Is there any technical limitation to have n dimensions also?
Two dimensions is all you're going to get.
No, the reason I'm asking, I was just having this vision. I'm not an artist, but imagine an artist standing in a 3D room, moving around, his position being detected, and he could sweep through sounds by walking through the room, for instance, in three or more dimensions.
There is a way you could do that, actually. If you set up a second vector on channel on the next channel up, that could then be on another pair of CCs, incoming CCs. So you could, if you then using four of them, you'd have to use two joysticks for that. Then you would then get a total of eight sounds that you could control on just two channels.
Okay. Thanks.
Right. If I bring up Rose Garden and I load, that's the one. Right. NRPNs can be used to set various things. Like you can set the programs, enable them, and all the rest of it. That's actually, to us, that's now old hat. We've been able to do that for about 3 or 4 years. So what I've got here is I've got a simple setup here. It sets that up. Oops, no, it doesn't. And it doesn't because we're on the wrong patch set. While we're on this, we've got multiple ways of getting to banks, instruments, and routes. We could go there, or we can pick it up through there. We can get to the instruments from there. We can get to the instruments from there as well. If we weren't there, we could go from there. We can also get to the instruments from there as well. So, I mean, there's multiple routes to actually get to those places.
So a beginner's question, maybe I missed something. What do the colors represent in this view?
Right.
That's good.
You see, the thing is, I'm so familiar with these, I forget that not everyone knows them.
It's really pretty, though.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. Right. The red indicates that ad synth is being used. The blue indicates that sub synth is being used. And the green one that pad synths. Now, when I say it's being used somewhere in an entire kit. If you've got a kit of, this is actually a good example, actually. If we load that one up and go to the kit edit, you can see that it's grouped across several entries. And the reason we've got that is it's not just because it looks pretty, it also because it gives you an indication of how the patch is going to perform. AdSynth is the heaviest one for processor usage. SubSynth tends to be relatively light and fairly quick and easy to set up, and is very good for sort of noise-based sounds. PadSynth is the slowest one to initialize. So if you're running, because you can change parts while you're actually running. If you're running a bit low on CPU, you don't want to be starting up an instrument that's got a PadSynth element, because it can be relatively slow. But it is, once it's actually there, it's the one that's the lightest of all on processor usage. So it's useful to know those. They appear here, and they appear in what you've actually got. But anyway, I'm now on the correct bank. So if I now run that, it should bring that. And it brings that to there. Now, that's a sort of reasonable sort of baseline. It's okay. It could get a bit monotonous after a while. And then you get a sort of a... Well, yeah, it's pretty. It's... what more can you say about it, really? Right, so if we stop that... I think, well, hang on. I'm not so keen on that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to bring control onto that. Now, remember what I said about switching parts off and on? Right, now you watch these tabs here. These are off. Ah. Now, if you notice these bars, they're all going up and down. There's no sudden cutoffs. You've got a nice smooth transition from them all, because you're not... I'm using the ADD16 version, which allows the note off to operate, but no further note ons. But because it is a note off, you'll get a proper decay, you'll still get the tail end of the note, you'll get whatever reverberation content there is there. If you were switching the parts off and on, you get a sharp stop on that. So this is much kinder. And if I then add the control for the pad sound as well, and I've got a ninth one on there, so we've got our changing bass. Again, nice smooth transitions. Ow, bugger. Try that again. And it's on the wrong channel. We'll get there in the end. That's because we just changed the settings on there. It's always a problem when you're using kit that you're not familiar with, because all sorts of things then switch off and on when you're not expecting it. Right, I should be getting that on channel 9 when I'm not. Why am I not getting it on channel 9? Because I'm not sending it on channel 9, probably. If you'll bear with me for a moment, that should. I've got it. All right, try again. Got now. Nice smooth transitions coming in. So you just play along quite happily. And there you go. You're now a one-man band, quite happily. All right, so that's... Now, these are, I've spread out across these eight parts there with a ninth one for actual playing with. But again, with this business, we're having 64 parts. I'd actually put all those four on the one channel, which then would put those on the next channel. So I've then only actually used two incoming channels for this eight-part backing track, which then leaves all the remaining 10 channels available for anything else I want to add. Depending on what voices you actually use is going to affect how many you can stuff on there before the CPU starts complaining about it. But it's quite a lot that you can shove on there, unless you use the heavy-duty patches. Right. I think there's various things which I've probably missed. I reminded myself to plug in the joystick. Well, I remembered that this time. Yes, there was something else. In the settings, I'm going to stop Rose Garden, and we're now going to see, our first X run, because Rose Garden always produces X runs when it closes down. And there they are, three of them. I have asked the Rose Garden people to look at that. I think it's probably shutting down the jack buffer before it's actually finished clearing whatever's in there. Something that's been queried by a number of people is this little feature we have here. Multiple instances. Now, these instances are semi-independent. You'll notice this one's produced its keyboard, and it's not going anywhere at the moment, which is a shame, because it should be. And it's got its own patch settings and all the rest of it, quite independent of that one. But also, if I look in settings here, it's got its own routing. It's not routing to jack, it's routing directly to a sound card. And it's routing to the default device, which should be the output from here. And we should be seeing it. We're seeing it as an input in here, but for some reason it's not actually coming out. And it was earlier, I don't know why it isn't now. Unless we are not possibly monitoring it. Yeah, we weren't monitoring it. I'm actually looping through into the KA6 here, which is why the volume is very low, because I've not got anything like the right sort of levels for it. But it is just proving the point that you can actually have multiple sound cards, and multiple instances of your Shimi can then be directed to individual sound cards, which again gives you effectively more capability. And the input can be ALSA as it is here. It could be jack again. So you could then have separate input routes and separate output routes on multiple instances, which can then be summed in the analog realm, which just gives you that much more capability. Also, it means if you've got a multi-core processor, then it's going to spread the load between the cores a bit more evenly, hopefully. How true that's going to be, I don't know, but the theory is there that it should do. It won't be of any benefit at all if you've only got a single core. Right, any questions on any of that? Right. Yeah. I'm not sure if that's good news or bad news, actually.
Or maybe you're just explaining it to us.
The other thing is, again, because these have their own settings, you'll notice this came up already to a set of conditions because I'd actually saved it previously. So there again, you can have a default setup where you just load it up, and you can also specify a particular instance that you want to bring up. So not just the first available one. You can say, I specifically want instance number. Well, you can't bring up zero again because it's already up. But I could say, for instance, I could have instance two, which I haven't used before, and Yoshimi instance two will come up to whatever the default settings are, which I can't remember offhand. We'll have a look, see what they are. Right, and it's going to have an... that's another thing. It can have an different internal buffer size to the first one, and it can have a different oscillator size if you want it. I can't think of any practical reason for wanting that, but you can actually have them if you want them. But this one has come up as... to Jack as the preferred MIDI and the preferred audio. So if I were to go through the virtual keyboard on there it is, it's come straight through. And if I had a Jack, anything sending Jack MIDI, it will come through to there, or you could pick it up from there if you wanted to. And again, because it's a new instance, it's got no save data, it wants to know if I want to save it or not. I'm not going to because I don't particularly want it, but and it will have its own history files as well. We are going to combine some of these files because some of them is unnecessary duplication. You don't need a different bank set for another instance, and it could actually get confusing if they had different sets. At the moment, they are independent, but we will be combining those. But things that are actually specific to the instance will always remain separate. Which actually brings me on to another point. The original config file, because we kept on adding bits to it, grew and grew, as I say, like Topsy, until it was coming quite unmanageable. So we've now split it up, and we split it up into... where are we? A number of different files... And if I go to the config, where are we? Config, Yoshimi. Right. We have a default presets directory, so your presets will want to go there by default. You don't have to use that, but they will be there by default. I've got none set, so there's none there. You've got the original banks, one for the first version. You've got one for the... other one that I brought up, and then we've now got one for a second instance, which I brought up briefly. They've got history files there, and they've also got the window files as well. The window files are very, very basic because we still don't know entirely what we're going to do there. It's just straightforward text giving the window name and its location and whether it's to be restarted or not. The rest are XML files. Because the config is now so changed from ZinAdSub, we no longer give it a ZinAdSub file type. It's now a Yoshimi one. So it now gives a doc type of Yoshimi data rather than ZinAd. We thought we should do that as only fair because it is not, that particular file is no longer compatible with Zin. And there's no reason why it should be. There's no reason why it should be compatible with anyone else that's running Yoshimi because no two people are going to run exactly the same configuration setups. So why would you want to have that compatible in that sense? History files, it's going to store whatever information, things were loaded and saved. Nothing has been loaded and saved except that there, so therefore there's nothing except that in there. But anyway, that is just about it for that. Right, there's one other thing which I thought might be interesting to look at, which again is a rose garden thingy. At one time, this particular program here had to run with two instances of Yoshimi. This was because it uses 32 different voices. I could now do this using one instance. Like, there's several ways I could do it. I could either set 32 parts and use the switching of the channels to get the effect I wanted. But when I first produced this, that feature wasn't available. So my only way of doing it was actually switching parts off and on, which meant I had to be far more careful because I had to make sure that they weren't being switched at a time when they were actually sounding. But it does actually prove something, because it will actually switch them. If I reset that, it will actually switch them while other tracks are sounding. And it should do so without making any clicks or bumps or anything like that. And it should also do so without producing any X runs. Now, if we just remember, we had three there from Rose Garden, so those three are still there. I should better run that through, and it's loading in parts as it needs them, and it's setting it should be setting their volumes there. I just set a volume there as it loaded it. Now, we've been able to do this for quite some time now, but the only thing that what used to be a problem was loading a part on top of another part. Loading a part on the basic simple sound wasn't a problem, but if you loaded a part of another one, you sometimes got funny buzzes and crackles and that. You didn't get an extra one, but you just got some funny sounds. Whereas now that no longer happens, because we've changed the way parts are muted in between part changes. And we've also changed the way program loading is handled as well. And if I bring up the... If you do a right click on any of these, it closes one as it opens the other. If you do a left click, it just opens it up straight. Now, it did actually select that root path. Now, we should see fairly soon, we should see it change bank. Just changed the drums and brought in a drum kit. You can see there. These days it does this upside down so you don't have to scroll anymore. Whereas previously it did it at the bottom and then you had to keep on scrolling down to see it. But now the most recent change is at the top. Again, we've got the bank has changed again. It gets less boring later on.
I have a question. Those events are MIDI events, right?
Yes.
You need to send them a little bit before the note.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so it has time to preload.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we haven't invented time travel. Now, we should find now it's starting to overlap previously used ones. I think the Echo Choir was one. Yes, that went on to 11, which had previously been years. Oh, 11, sorry, 12 rather, which had previously been years. Again, this gives the command line numbers rather than the GUI values. I think it's actually unfortunate that when the MIDI spec was set up, things like banks, MSB and LSB, or as we use them, banks and routes, started from zero, but things like program changes started from one, which, I mean, it just throws everybody, and channel numbers start from one. So again, we've, that one wasn't there, we've stuck that on there. And there's yeah, see, we're not seeing any further X runs at all or anything like that. We're not running terribly low on on the setup. We're running at 128 frames, so I mean that's giving us 5 milliseconds. I have had this on my door at home running at 16 frames at 48k, which is not bad. Well, it's a bit insane really, because it's less than a millisecond. And the reason I chose this particular tune for this is quite a lot of these, I mean, like that master synth there, that's one of my heaviest patches going. And if that can work through that while that's sounding, then I don't think we're going far wrong. This Ghost Choir, again, it's quite demanding because it's got a very long decay on it. And while Yoshimi has a decay in operation, it can't produce any further notes. It can't replace that note as such. It's still going to be doing processing on it. You get, I think it's another couple of changes, another overwriting changes. We've got far read in there, I see already. I'm trying to remember which ones have yet to come up. Oh, yes, it's Rushes, which is our Voyager, that's the one I was thinking of. It's going to produce the background pattern on here. And that's a simple subsynth sound. It's actually very effective. Just, I'm using these to produce a sort of extra noise content to it, which is, I would say of the voices available, subsynth is my favorite actually. If you know, if you're allowed to have favourites. And the clarinet has now come in now as well. Again, that's overwritten another voice. I mean, I can't remember which one of them gets overwritten about 4 times. Which again suggests that we're doing something right with the way the patches are being loaded. And again, in here we've got, ever since I actually switched to that, we've got the full history of what we've done. One suggestion I was asked about, whether it's possible, was to actually save this information, this form. I don't know if there's actually any need for it, but it could be if it was wanted. But I can't personally think of any reason why anyone would want to do that, because all the information is in the source file anyway, the MIDI file. So why would you want to effectively duplicate it? And there was a nice little fade down on there as well. So there you go. That is Yoshimi. And again, we're still at those same three X runs that we had when we closed Rose Garden last time. And if I close Rose Garden now, we'll get some more X runs. And lo and behold, there we are. There's a few more. I don't think there's much more I can say about it.
We'll just talk to Rui about this. If you open the edit, click the edit button of your patch,
yeah,
and then open the subsynth edit window.
Yeah.
Why is this a subsynth, not an at synth?
Blame it on Paul Nasker.
Was it wrong? I mean, this is our edit.
Yeah, blame it on Paul Nasker.
It was always like this?
It was always like that, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that's actually something I forgot to mention since last time. It's actually saying it's subsynth on part 7 and it's Voyager. So that information is there now. And also, if I bring up, if I enable add synth on there, you'll get the voice premises and it'll say it's now an AdSense voice rather than the AdSense main part. And if I go on to that element, it'll also tell you that it's oscillator 1 that we're looking at. So you know which oscillator of which part, and it's AdSense there. And we get a similar thing with the pad synth. This will show that it's the pad synth oscillator. You only get one of those, but nevertheless it'll tell you which one it is. I don't know why Paul called subsynth, because it is and it isn't really. What you're doing is you're taking white noise and taking everything away except the ones that you're allowing through. So would you call that add or sub? I don't know. It is what it is, basically.
Intuitively, I'm tweaking up harmonics, I guess.
Yeah, that's it.
For me, additive, not subtractive.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would agree with you to some degree. At all. But at the same time, if you're going to call that an ad synth, what are you going to call an ad synth? Okay, it's what we've got. It's what we live with. Actually, while we're on this, I don't know how far I went into this last year. Let's clear all this. Reset everything. Go back to square one. We can also edit from there. I forgot that. That's another thing you can do. If you do a right click on there, it will actually bring up the edit window. Almost everything you might want to do, you can do from several different routes. And I've just realized something else, which I forgot to mention, is this little fella here, Humanize. That does a very small randomization, but it does randomization across the entire part. That's all engines and all kits. So it's not just one part, it's the whole of that part is going to be subject to that randomization. And that again will be saved with a patch set. It won't be saved in a voice because it's not a voice element, it's a patch set element. So the patch set will save that setting as well. But anyway, we were talking about subsynth. I probably haven't got that anymore. And let's go back to using the virtual keyboard for a moment. Standard subsynth sound. Slightly sort of phasey sort of sound. Increase the bandwidth. It's quite obviously noise. Because that's all it is. It's a band of noise. And if you bring up another harmonic. Look at that. Again. It's bands of noise. And that is what people tend to lose sight of. The other thing is that it's the levels are not fixed levels in the sense that the whole thing is normalized. The level of that is relative to the overall level, which is basically being at the moment being defined by that. If I pull that down, then it's mostly that you're hearing. Actually, if I do link back onto the keyboard again, where are we? Oop. Right, if I bring that down, that up again. Now that actually, that see that part four is now actually that harmonic number four is quite quiet comparatively. If I bring that down, the number four is getting louder. So it is a relationship between the various levels. Because as I was saying earlier, this is why you can't readily give these numbers. They wouldn't mean anything. Because you'd only have to be able to class them as a percentage of the total output, whatever that happens to be. It's a really weird thing. It takes a while getting your head around it. And I'm not even sure that I've done so myself. Right. Any other questions at all?
This is not related to Yoshimi, but just a small note. I saw you had running TTE MIDI.
Mm-hmm.
I made a fork for it, a fork of it for mod to make it work with Jack MIDI instead of Alsa MIDI.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to try it if you want.
Yes, I'd be interested in that. Yeah
it's on GitHub moddevices/mod-TTE-MIDI.
Right, yeah.
And
I'll
then
look for it. Yeah.
It connects with, well, you have to get your user with permissions to read.
Yeah. And okay. Yeah.
It has to be the same user that runs Jack T.
Yeah.
But if that is working for you, then
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. One thing I'm going to put my hand up and say straight away is we handle Alsa MIDI better than we handle Jack MIDI at the moment. I know that, and I know the reason why, and we are working on it. But it's like everything else. It's priorities. What do you do first? And my personal priority at the moment is the command line. That's the one I'm concentrating on most. All right. No more? Huh?